Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Today on the show, I talked to Elizabeth Banks. She was on the show back in 2013, episode 352. A lot has happened for her since then. She's been directing and producing films. She's been very politically active. She's been a game show host. Currently, she's in the film Call Jane, which is now playing in theaters. I enjoyed that film very much. And I was excited to talk to her. I don't know why. She's just one of those people I feel familiar with and feel like, you know, I get along with. So it was kind of a fun chat. This is Monday. You're listening to this on Monday. Tomorrow is Election Day. Vote. If you haven't voted, I imagine many of you have already voted. I imagine most of the people that listen to this show are voting tomorrow or have already done so. Look, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know it's not good. It hasn't been good since 2016, really. Whatever we were hanging our hope on, if you had any, which I didn't, was just some kind of placeholder. And that placeholder, I don't know if it really worked out. It doesn't seem like it did. And I had some realizations in Texas. I really did. Of all places, Texas, I had the realizations. And I'm doing shows, and I got several DMs, several emails from people, more than usual, saying, look, I was almost too depressed to go to the show. I'm barely holding on. I don't know what to do. These are people who live in Texas, so it's compounded a bit there. And they felt better. They felt less alone. They felt, you know, a certain amount of joy to be seen because of the nature of why I do comedy. That's all you can do, man, if you're a creative person. I went to the Rothko Chapel in Houston. Look, I was in Dallas. I was in San Antonio, stayed at a funky hotel, ate some good barbecue in Dallas, stayed at a weird hotel in San Antonio. I always enjoy Houston because some rich fuckers, you know, made a lot of nice parks and have owned a lot of nice art and created a lot of nice museums there. And the Rothko Chapel is there, Mark Rothko, the brilliant abstract artist. And this is all coming together for me because, you know, I dated a painter, Sarah, who did beautifully colorful paintings, abstract paintings. And at some point we talked about it and she painted almost as an antidepressant. It came from a place to shine a light into her own darkness. And if you look at Rothko over the arc of his career, you know, the colors he used for a while, you could see the same thing happening, is that there are these floating sort of shapes in these kind of almost like abstract mists, you know, just two or three colors, usually, you know, rectangular, floating, no edges. And to me, it was perfectly peaceful and had a tremendous effect on my disposition. I can stand in front of a Rothko for you know, 20 minutes. So I guess it seems that Rothko was commissioned in 1964 to do these paintings for this spiritual space that was designed by Philip Johnson. It's a non-denominational chapel. All faith kind of spiritual space is what they call it. And there is, I guess, like 14 murals, if you call them that. They're large canvases, abstract and very Rothko-esque. And what was fascinating about this visit to the Rothko Chapel is I'm thinking about all these things. I'm thinking about, what am I really doing? You know, I'm not a huge star. I have, you know, my fans, and my relationship that with them is very specific. I'm trying to keep my shit together. That is the theme of my work. And I'm trying to see things in an honest way or in a different way to shed light on things as I keep my shit together. And those are the kind of people that enjoy what I do. And what I do provides something for them. It makes them feel better. It's heavy, but I got some heavy people. Emotionally heavy. Sensitive people. Empaths. People aggravated existentially about things totally out of the control that seem to be coming down on them every day. And I go to this Rothko Chapel, having been a fan of his and having been there many years ago on my first traveling, like probably 35 years ago, and it's been renovated a bit. But I realize this is a spiritual space. These are huge murals, huge pieces that surround, it's almost octagonal. I don't know what shape it is, but they're on every wall, and there's benches and, you know, some sitting pillows if you want to do that. And they're huge, and they take up the whole wall, and they're dark. They're deep purples. They're a kind of multi-layered black purplish things. You know, some of them are lighter than others. But when I was looking at him this time in this spiritual place, and when you think spiritual, you think uplifting, and I'm looking into the fucking abyss in these paintings. You know, people get married in this place. They meditate in this place, and it's not uplifting. It's a quiet space. But at that point, I believe Mark Rothko, that the colors had gone out for him. They had gone out. He did the Seagram's Commission for the Four Seasons Hotel after that. And those are some of my favorite paintings of his. You can see them in the Tate. And the light is gone. It's like, it's bleak as fuck. But it's true. And it's his truth. And whether it was coming from his mind or not, he was such a capable artist at that point that he could speak for the human spirit. He owned part of the human spirit. He could represent part of the human spirit, and you make your choices. If you pay your dues and you do your shit and you keep putting your stuff out in the world, keep creating, and you are gifted with some sort of talent, then you speak for the human spirit. That's part of the language of art. And I didn't realize until this time in this life and what we're all dealing with and what he was dealing with at the time, I think his health was fading. You know, and he was, you know, not well. He committed suicide in 1970. And he didn't see the completion of this thing. I don't know when he completed the canvases. But the truth he was seeing, the part of the human spirit he was representing, was the darkness. And he brought to that darkness his craft. And he created a context for it. And framed it. And elevated it as a fundamental existential truth. But sitting in that chapel for me at this point in time was not uplifting, but it elevated my spirit to be in the realization of profound darkness. And there's a Zen to that, and because it was captured and framed and done with a master's hand, it spoke to my heart. It speaks to the heart. It is a plane that is meditative, but it's ethereally bleak. And you can build from that. So whatever you bring to that place, to those paintings, to the art of darkness, you can reflect in that. And it's a hell of a foundation to see your life against. It might be the purest vision of your life and who you are, framed against darkness, against the abyss, against the bleak, unforgiving universe. And that, to me, that realization was tremendous. I walked out of there like, I get it, man. I get it. And I thought about what I do. Not that I'm Rothko, but why do I fester in the pain of whatever I live with and in my fear? Why do I work from that space? Because that's how I contextualize it. That's how I feel it emotionally. That's how I put it out there, and I make it funny. So it sinks in, and then you see yourself. What's at the core? And then I went to the Museum of Fine Arts over in Houston. They had this Philip Guston. I think that's how you say his last name. Philip Guston. Show, and I never got his stuff completely. It was sort of cartoonish, but I never saw the entire arc of his paintings. And I got that too. Again, you know, he's dealing with racism. He's dealing with figurative Klansmen in cartoon modes in his paintings. And this sort of kind of weird cartoonish chaos. It was all there. You know, power, oppression, terror. All there. The whole thing blew my mind. The trip to Houston was elevating and completely relevant in light of what we're dealing with and what's going to come down probably tomorrow. So how do we keep creating? How do we keep, not hope, but how do we hold on to our humanity, to our spirit, in light of the worst parts of the human animal succeeding and taking power? It's a challenge, but it's been met by generations and generations and generations of creative people who find a way to elevate the human spirit. I don't know if we can do anything politically, but it's time to fucking connect. It's time to fucking find that part of you that cares about people. For real. I'm talking to myself, man. So, yeah, vote. We'll see what happens. But prepare for the fucking worst. So, look, this movie that Elizabeth Banks is in, it's quite intense and real. It's historical. It's about the Call Jane was a service that there were women who were providing abortions for people who needed them when they were illegal. And it was just a group of women. Some learned how to do them because that's what needed to be done. So it's totally relevant to the situation we're in now. It's not the exact same situation. There are other options now. But it does really connect you with what it means when women have no fucking rights over their physical autonomy. And she's also got other stuff going, and she also has hope. So don't let my negativity bring you down, because this conversation is pretty chipper. This is me talking to Elizabeth Banks. Call Jane is now playing in theaters. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm tired.
Wow, this is going downhill quick. Started great.
I just want to be honest.
And then we're okay. And then we're tired. Do you want to add some more words?
You know, you just get to a place of exhaustion that's constant.
I am there. But yeah. You have, how old are your kids now?
9 and 11.
Oh, so that's
yeah, it's
doing
real.
It?
Yeah. You know, and I just came back from New Zealand. I was gone a long time, so I'm also catching up with
Where
my
were you,
life.
New Zealand?
I went to New Zealand to make a film.
Is it that cocaine movie?
No, that I made in Ireland.
So wait, so what was going on in New Zealand? Did you buy a house?
No. I'm not ready to give up on the U.S. just yet.
Oh, wow.
I won't be one of those people. I'm going to fight from the inside. That's going to be my plan.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Let me know what I can do from Canada to help you. What was going on in New Zealand?
I made a movie called A Mistake.
And this is just acting?
Yeah, just acting.
You didn't produce it?
Nope.
What's it about?
It's based on a best-selling book about a surgeon who makes a mistake in surgery all the ramifications of that.
My dad was a surgeon.
No kidding.
People
I actually knew that, I think.
People look for mistakes.
Well,
there's a whole business around trying to find mistakes.
That's part of it.
So how was that experience in New Zealand? Good.
Yeah, it was. The people were amazing. The place is beautiful. It was winter though.
So what does that mean? Snow?
It was raining a lot. Mm. It was cold. Mm. Pretty much every day off, it poured rain. So I didn't explore as much as I would have liked to.
Yeah, I hear it's beautiful.
It is, yeah.
That's not where I would go, by the way.
No.
I don't have that kind of money. You know what I don't understand is these rich people who want to, you know, kind of bunker in. It's like, what are you going to do with that life?
Yeah.
Why would you want to be fucking alive for that?
I don't know. I know.
It's sort of, we did it. We survived the thing. Let's go outside. Like, well, it's not rushing anything. You
know. They're in the bunker.
Yeah, just hanging out.
Also, but like, what are they doing?
I don't know.
We're not making TV at that point. We're not entertaining anybody.
We're not doing anything. I guess like it's like a strange love. I don't know if they're going to just reproduce the next wave of, I don't know what happens. All I know is I'm a little freaked out. Not just about fascism, but about the water situation. Of course it's real.
Yeah.
It's crazy. How many pictures of a half-empty Lake Mead do we have to see before?
I don't know. They're going to find more bodies in that thing, too, don't you think?
I like that spin of all the drought of these news stories of like, look what we found. It's amazing.
That's the spin.
Yeah. The world is ending, but it's so cool.
But we're rediscovering a bunch of mafiosa-killed apes. You know,
in Mississippi, they found Civil War belt buckles.
Yeah,
and there's some prehistoric shit happening.
Oh, they're gonna unearth the dinosaurs. Yeah,
yeah,
that'll be cool. And all the woolly mammoths, like where the ice is melting.
Yeah.
That kind of blows my mind.
That all of it, like even if they find like a sneaker or a shoe from like 2,000, 3,000 years ago, you're like, wow, just a shoe from a guy who was walking along.
And then just his end.
What was that? Before we get into the depth of it, whatever that's going to be. But like, so what is this cocaine movie?
Cocaine Bear?
Yeah, I want it because it was Liotta's last movie, huh?
Yeah.
And you directed it.
I did, yeah.
What's that movie about?
It is about, it's inspired by a true story.
Yeah.
There are multiple podcasts about this story. And
is that where you got the idea from a podcast?
It. The writer, and I read the script. The writer got the idea from an article, I think, or a magazine article maybe, about this drug runner, infamous drug runner named Andrew C. Thornton. He has a really fascinating story. He was like an entitled guy from the South. He was the lieutenant governor of Kentucky's son, I think, is what the dad did. But anyway, he was a paratrooper in the Army. He was like a lawyer and he was in law enforcement for a hot second.
Uh-huh.
And basically he was in narcotics.
Yeah.
And started running drugs for the Colombians.
Huh.
Flying planes.
Yeah.
His MO was that he would dump the drugs out of the plane for people on the ground to pick up. And then he would parachute out of the plane because that's what he did in the Army. And then the plane would get ditched. Because, you know, what was the plane?
Yeah,
a couple hundred grand.
Yeah,
and like he's got an $80 million drug run.
Mm.
So he was hard to find, hard to track.
Yeah.
And he fell out of this plane one day and died dead in a driveway in Kentucky. And so
they
knew he'd done a drug run that night, right?
Okay.
So it's like there's more. He had some drugs on him. We had got the police report. And
it's
very true to life what we do in the movie.
Yeah.
The way he's dressed is exactly how
what
he was dressed.
What year is it?
1985.
That's an interesting time
for
clothes.
It was actually September 11th, 1985. We don't mention too soon, so we don't mention
that. So you directed this, so you had to get the set deck and the wardrobe person to get that weird mid-80s clothing.
Correct. Although I didn't go too crazy. I didn't want to fetishize the 80s.
But it's still a little different.
Yes, it's a little different.
Yeah. Okay, September 11th.
So basically that guy dies and that's all true. And then the other true thing is that 3 months later they found a black bear dead in the middle of the Chattahoochee forest who had consumed like 70 pounds of cocaine. And they did a necropsy on the body and like every internal organ was like exploded inside this poor animal. I know, it's terrible. So our story picks up the day after he's dropped all the drugs in Chattahoochee and tells the story of the bear. have found the drugs.
So it's like a Disney
Pre-death.
Movie?
Pre-death.
It's a Disney movie?
It's a Universal movie.
Does it have a...
Perfect
like,
Universal
No, but I mean,
movie.
Like, is it one of those things where you have, like, and then the bear crossed the...
It's like a bear eating honey, but yeah. but it's actually just Coke. Kind of.
Bear's partying like Scarface. There's other bears around at the
you
table.
Know, and you got to see it.
Talking about his day.
I've seen it with an audience and I couldn't be prouder, actually.
Really?
Of the ride yeah. that I've created. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really proud of it.
Because when the last time I talked to you was like a million years ago and you were just, I think we talked about surrogacy more than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
You hadn't directed movies yet. You were just acting. You'd done a couple shorts.
Yes, that's right. But then I think I directed Pitch Perfect 2 at that point, hadn't I? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe.
Hold on.
Maybe.
I think I have it.
2015, 2016.
Well, I don't think that, I think it was like 2013,
You
no?
might be right. I had babies before I directed. In fact, I was just looking at, it's the 10-year anniversary of Pitch Perfect.
It was 2013.
There you go. Wow. Had See, not directed yet.
You had done nothing.
Now I've done 3 feature films.
That's crazy.
I know, right?
But you were producing Pitch Perfect and then like, yes. boom. Mm-hmm. And that was like, that's like good business.
Pitch Perfect's pretty good business.
Yeah.
You know, we made something people really like.
But
it's so joyful, those freaking films. I love them too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's nothing wrong with making people happy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just
if you can.
Make people happy. Entertain people.
Sure. Why not? We're all going.
Well, yeah. Let's make it a little easier.
But so you started the production company with your husband?
Yes.
When was that? That was on the Pitch Perfect. What did you do that
no,
for?
No, we
Pitch
did that. We didn't know. We produced a movie called Surrogates, starring Bruce Willis, back in the day. That was our first film. That
what
we
was
did
what year was that?
Oh God, 2013. Yeah. I don't know. Oh, okay. 2012, something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
So yeah, we've had the company a long
okay.
time. Yeah.
And I remember we talked about you being mostly Jewish.
Yes.
Did you
a
follow
Jewish
through?
Home, a Jewish home.
Did you follow through and get the full Jew?
Did you do the full Jew? I never mikvahed. I never had a mikvah.
No, I know. But did the conversion classes?
Yeah, I did some classes. Yeah. My kid is about to start his bar mitzvah
oh, really?
Situation. Yeah. We're going through with it. We're sticking with it still.
But is your husband religious?
He's religious enough. You know what it is?
It's cultural, no?
It's cultural. Yeah. It's like,
you do
it's
it.
His parents.
Right, of course.
Right? He can't call his father and be like, I'm not going to have a bar mitzvah
right.
for a kid. Never going to happen.
Right.
Right? He just can't disappoint.
So you're in.
The parents.
Yeah, so now you got a
oh,
kid.
No, we're totally in.
In
we
the
do
bedroom.
Shabbat. We love Shabbat.
You do the Shabbat?
Love
Light
it.
Light the candles?
Of course.
Buy a challah?
Fridays. Yeah. Buy the challah.
Have you ever made a challah?
I have not made a challah.
I haven't either.
I would like to braid bread, though.
Yeah, why not?
I don't think it's that tricky. I think you could do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't do breads.
I don't really do breads either.
Do you cook?
Yeah.
No
I
bread?
I like to cook.
I can do like a quick bread. I can do one that doesn't involve yeast. I've not fucked
well,
with
that's,
yeast.
Well, that's my thing, too. The whole rise and the special drawer
Sounds
people
complicated.
Have.
Chemistry.
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Irish soda bread, I can nail that shit.
Wow.
Yeah. I got some good recipes for Irish brown
you're
bread,
very,
Irish soda
first
bread.
First of all, I love an Irish brown bread.
Right?
You're speaking, that's my people. I'm 99% Irish.
Do you like the sweet one or just the brown bread?
I like them both.
Oh, yeah.
The sweet one, though, with butter. Come on.
No, that's the best.
A little warm.
Yeah.
With the butter on it.
So you shot that movie in Ireland?
Cocaine Bear we shot in Ireland, yeah.
Why?
We shot Ireland for Georgia.
What was the incentive of that?
It was a literal tax incentive.
To shoot in Ireland?
Yes. It was cheaper to shoot in Ireland.
Because you could have shot
in Georgia.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was
cheaper
a little. It actually worked out. And frankly, Georgia, there was a bunch of hurricanes last summer.
Oh, yeah.
And it rained a lot in Georgia.
Right.
So we actually kind of lucked out with the weather.
What part of Ireland?
Just south of Dublin.
Great.
I stayed in a place called Dalkey, which is where Bono lives.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And like other famous, like Enya lives there.
What was that?
Really
what was their big
few,
song?
There's really only a few famous. Yeah, that's it. Oh my gosh. Wow. You
I can't
it.
Remember what she's saying.
I don't either. It all sounds
Did Bono come
me.
Say hi?
Nope. Did not. Wasn't around. He's no idiot. There's no summer really in Ireland.
Yeah.
It was the high of 72 was the highest it ever
that's
got.
That's perfect for me.
He spends the summer in an actual summery place probably, like the south of France.
I think I'm going to interview him.
Oh, you should.
I don't know if the structure can contain it.
What does that mean?
I don't know. He's just like he's Bono.
I've met him. He's lovely.
Is he?
Yeah. And
All right.
He cares about things. Know, the world. And yeah. He wants to make a difference. Like, God, Bono, he's the best.
Yeah. So how long were you in Ireland?
5.5 months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you buy a house?
Did I buy it? Well,
I just want to keep asking if you
really
buy
a house. You really want me. If my husband's interested in Portugal. I can't, pretend that's not
true. Are you really going to do that?
No. I'm not.
Where you can just pay for your citizenship and go to a place where you have nothing in common with anybody and be like part of that kind of weird upper class culture of expatriates?
No, I'm personally not doing that.
Are you just going to let him go with the kids?
He can buy it and get the citizenship just in case, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you know, who's going to, nobody's going to fuck with Portugal.
Who knows? I just applied for permanent residency in Canada, which is like a green card. I'm willing to do that.
Wow. Well, not an option, I don't think, for me.
What are you talking about?
Well, how would I do that?
What do you mean?
They're not going to take everybody in Canada.
No, of course. Well, I know. I would just like to be taken before I have to show up as a refugee. You know, I don't want to be, you know, with my bag and my Jewish star armband trying to figure out how to get out of the America.
That might be coming back.
Yeah, it might be.
Unreal.
Do you feel like as a partial Jew, as someone who's Jew adjacent?
Yeah.
Do you feel
the anti-Semitism?
Yeah.
Of course I do. I have young boys that are Jewish.
Yeah.
You know, have a Jewish last name and practice Jew, like are Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And went to Jewish preschool.
Yeah.
And man, you know, there were certain days when that armed guard outside the school, I was like, yep, good.
Yeah.
Let's have that.
Yeah.
It's scary.
The whole thing is fucking scary. Yeah. But I mean, like, I really liked the movie, the Call Jane movie.
Thank you.
I really did like it. You were great in it.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you produce that one?
Nope.
Oh, just acted.
Just acted. In it.
Like, because I had just seen not long ago the documentary.
Yes, the Janes, yeah.
Right? Was it HBO, I think, or somewhere? I don't remember. I never knew anything about it. But I thought the movie did a very good job. Like, it was well written.
It's beautifully written, yeah.
Yes.
It's like a slow burn, too, of like this.
Isn't she a playwright or woman?
No, she's a screenwriter. Okay. She's Academy Award nominated for Carol.
Oh, that's right. That was a great movie.
Great movie. Also kind of a slow burn, yeah.
But like writing for women, for real.
For real, for real.
Yeah. Woman writing for women. Yeah.
It was beautifully written, and I thought everybody did such a great job. I loved working on it. I loved working with Phyllis Nagy as the writer-director.
Yeah.
She is a writer on the script. That the script was written by two other incredible women.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Three people. How'd that happen? Different versions?
Yeah. Well, yes. The duo that wrote it.
Yeah.
We is what brought Phyllis to the table, and Phyllis directed it. She directed a Mrs. Harris back in the day with Annette Bening.
Uh-huh.
I think for HBO, right? So technically has done a feature, but it was on TV, so they count that.
Yeah.
So this was her directorial feature debut.
Okay.
But she's incredibly talented. And,
really?
Yeah.
The thing about the movie, though, is that I know, when do you think you became politically active? Like as a
I was pretty young.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I remember you speaking about, I don't know if I saw it somewhere, but the concern was, you know, for you during the election, during, you know, voting activism, that we can't, that the Supreme Court, that was the primary issue for you, and reproductive rights.
Yes.
Was the issue you were active around.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this movie as a sort of a warning, but now the deed is done. When this movie was made, had it happened yet? No.
No. No, Dobbs. The Dobbs decision was just this summer, and we made the film well over a year ago. And I read the script, in like 2018 or something.
Yeah.
So the script had existed for a long time, and when I first read the script, I remember thinking, "Oh, this is like an amazing way to sort of honor these revolutionary women in Chicago and tell a little bit of history that maybe people don't know about." Because when I read the script, I didn't know about the Janes.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, this is like a cool movie and it kind of aligns with my value system. I'm interested. And now that the Dobbs decision has happened, you know, it just feels like we've created like a mirror for society. guess what America looked like before Roe v. Wade got passed? Women in a lot of desperate situations and
doing surgery.
And doing surgery, yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. I couldn't, like...
These procedures, yeah.
That they, it was just this kind of, the whole thing with the doctor, who wasn't a doctor, that I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then just women learning how to do this procedure in apartments.
Yeah. But you have to remember, there's a history for 10,000 years of human beings where women handled all that stuff.
Sure.
Women did reproductive health care, right? Like, we had midwives and doulas and all that whole practice that very slowly, one of the things I really kind of studied in preparing for this movie was those practices. You know, I have a really good friend who's a midwife and... who basically is like a practicing OB for all intents and purposes. You know, she's an RN in practice midwifery. And she knows the history of midwifery. It's incredible to think about how basically the patriarchy was like, you know what? We want to control that. You know what I mean?
Right.
From now on, if you want to deliver a baby, you have to be a doctor.
Right.
But you know who can go to medical school? Only men.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so suddenly it was like, wait, what? And now, and then, you know, women were basically getting drugged up and told to be quiet, no screaming, and get in this room, make it easy for the doctor to deliver the baby.
Right.
And the doctor was a guy.
Right.
And it's just, you think, like, think about how that just slowly got taken away from women as like, well, no, like, we'll take care of you. It's too dangerous for you to do it. Meanwhile, they weren't washing their hands yet. You know, women were still dying all the time during childbirth.
Right.
You know, I don't think it improved the maternal mortality rate when we just handed it over to, like, dudes.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating, that that was just something that all of a sudden, like, women weren't allowed to handle.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, we still have all these rules and regulations and everything. And look, I'm happy to have safety standards in place for things.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, like, you could just have a baby at home with your friend delivering it. Like, that can happen.
My friend's wife's a doula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I think about, so when the women in this story just decided to perform the abortions themselves, it was a part of a long tradition and history of women caring for women in circumstances.
But what did you know about, I mean, I imagine that terminating pregnancies has always been part of them.
Always. Yeah.
How did they do it back in the day?
I mean, mushrooms.
Oh, everything.
Teas.
Yeah, mostly physical pain.
Yeah, pain, punch in the gut. I don't know. I wasn't there.
No, I know. I'm just curious if you... We're saying that women have been part of healthcare for this long. I just wonder if there... What were the other methods?
Well, you have to remember that women always had to plan their families. Like, when you read the history of it, too, I mean, it goes all the way back to, like, nomads. So if a woman had, you know, a mother carrying her baby and had to pick up the whole camp and, like, now they're going to migrate somewhere. Well, if she's just had the baby...
Yeah.
She now can't get pregnant right away.
Right.
She doesn't want a second baby right away because she can't carry two.
Right.
So there was always family planning.
Right. Sure. Right? Of
course. There was always this sense of, like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have one, and then 2 years later, I'm another one, and da, da, da. And also, it preserved your health.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And your physical health.
Yeah.
And people die during childbirth. So, like, if you were an important woman in your tribe, maybe you don't have 20 kids.
Well, I mean, that's something that's obviously going to happen again, the dying in childbirth because of this.
Well, our maternal mortality rate for a country as wealthy as the United States is terrible, especially for Black women in the South. It's like a Black woman in the South is 3 times more likely to die during childbirth than a white lady. And, you know, all of these abortion bans, they all disproportionately affect women of color and poor people. And it's all terrible. You know,
I thought in the movie you handled that sort of patriarchal thing well, or the writing did, you know, in terms of these large rooms of men making decisions, looking at you. And I thought that your sort of kind of conversion into activism in the movie was, you know, very honestly played.
Yeah.
Because, like, you would be the least likely candidate. In a way.
Totally. I mean, I say that all, you know, we talk about that. Like, this is the character I played, Joy, in the movie. Not somebody who thinks she's ever going to seek out abortion health care.
Yeah.
Right? This is not something on her radar at all.
Right.
But when her life is in danger when she has to choose life or death for herself.
Yeah.
She's pretty clear in choosing her life.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
And staying around to mother her kid. And
also the men were just sort of like, nah.
Yeah. The men were just like, nah. Yeah. We don't really care what happens to you.
It's kind of, and that's what's happening.
That's, oh yeah, that's been happening. I mean, that's the, that is what's happening all the time.
But now, like, with it outlawed in so many states, I mean, it's, that's right back where it was.
Absolutely. I also think the film helps recenter pregnant people as the people who should have their rights.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, like, these women, as long as there have been pregnant people, there have been people who have not wanted to be pregnant. So abortion bans do not get rid of abortion. They just make abortion
harder
to access
and more unsafe,
and put people exactly in more unsafe situations and more desperate situations.
Yeah.
They drain people's bank and they steal people's time and energy and, emotions. I mean, there's nothing healthy or life affirming about an abortion ban, in my opinion.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now there's like, I don't know if it doesn't seem like it's going the way of the Janes, but it seems like there's an underground network of abortion pills going on.
It's not even underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, there's tons. The Bridget Alliance is, I mean, if you're out there and you're looking for abortion care, you can find these abortion funds.
Yeah.
They help people get bus tickets and childcare and take the day off from work. I mean, they're really helping people access the health care that they need. And, you know, the majority of women seeking abortion health care are already moms.
Yeah. Right?
So these are women who are fully aware of what pregnancy does to their body.
Yeah.
And they're fully aware of the emotional, psychological, and financial toll of raising kids. They are family planning. Right?
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Right.
They're going, wait a minute, I got two kids. And by the way, every time you have a kid, it's a gamble, right? Yeah. Like, everybody knows that.
Right.
We don't have healthcare for that, just FYI.
Yeah.
So, like, you have a baby that has some sort of birth defect. Are you going in the hole for $1 million? Like, I don't understand. Like, you know what I mean? And then just putting that decision, taking that decision away from somebody who's actually going to be responsible for everything that comes after the birth of the baby.
Yeah.
Is like insane to me. It's like, this person knows the consequences.
Yeah. And I guess I've gotten to a point where I can't understand why decisions are made and supported. I don't understand the humanity of it. I don't know how, because it's not just religion. You know, it's some other fucked up thing.
Well, it's control.
Yeah.
It's not just religion.
But like, you look at these men, it's sort of like, what are you doing? Like, you know,
and women. There's a lot of women in the
Like, what kind of fucking people
movement.
Are they?
Well, I think, look, there's,
I mean, I'm
I don't
not,
know.
I'm not asking you to
I'm
answer
not,
it.
I mean.
But like, how are you able... Like, you know, when we're talking at the beginning about, you know, the future.
Yeah.
What is it that keeps, why are you able to maintain hope? Are you just not the kind of person that's totally paranoid and going to let your brain break from fear?
I do not lead a fear-based life. Hmm. For sure I don't. And that is definitely part of it. And also because I get to tell stories, and I know that when you hear a story that rings a little true for you. You know, my character Joy, this is a good example. You know, she goes in, she accesses abortion healthcare through this Jane network that takes care of her. But she's pretty judgmental of people seeking abortions.
Sure.
And then she starts to hear their stories, right? And the stigma around it starts to fall away.
Yeah.
And that to me is the hope that people hear the stories and they see themselves and they go, wait a minute, I don't want that to happen to my daughter.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen to my wife.
Well, I think it is a big issue and I think it is an important issue. And I think even if you're, you know, right, it has to be, you have to make them connect to like, well, even if they're like, I'm too old to have a baby. This is not going to be my problem.
Right.
How do you make them empathetic to
other
women
people,
whose problem?
Right. You got to tell them the story of women who needed healthcare.
And couldn't get it.
And make them really go, oh, that's not good. Oh, I don't want that to happen.
And also the fact we're the only fucking, I mean, like, there are other countries where it's like they don't even think about this.
60 countries since Roe v. Wade, 60 other countries have liberalized their abortion laws. They've gotten
Ireland
better.
And the church owned it.
Yeah. only four countries have taken those rights away, and it's like Nicaragua, Poland, maybe. I don't even know.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's not
so
great.
What is your, outside of doing like this movie, how are you involved? Like, here we are heading into the midterms in days.
Yeah.
Are you involved?
I am involved. I sit on the Creative Council. I'm the head of the Creative Council for the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is the legal organization that's fought for reproductive justice at the Supreme Court level.
Uh-huh.
The last three times they lost the Dobbs case, but continue now to work at the state level.
Yeah.
They're right now in court, literally today, trying to block Georgia's 6-week abortion ban again. And they'll work to get, you know, women's reproductive justice, which is basically our human rights and our equality,
yeah.
You know, enshrined in state constitutions as much as possible, like here in California.
Yeah. I just don't, like you said before, there's no postnatal responsibility.
No.
And like, what's going to happen to all these people? I've done jokes about it in a very cynical way.
Yeah.
That, you know, in terms of these unwanted kids, you know, hopefully they can end up okay, but like the possibility of them ending up okay is not great.
Look, you know, it's interesting. I have a home in Utah, and I was in Utah when the Dobbs decision came down. Yeah. And on the radio there, I was started listening to the Mormons talk about it.
Hmm.
And interestingly, they were saying, someone was saying that an unwanted child is a tragedy. It's a tragedy all the way around.
Yeah.
And we don't need tragedies. It's terrible.
And that was a Mormon?
Yeah. They were real. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautifully said. And also a great reminder that not every religion demonizes abortion care. Judaism doesn't.
Uh-uh.
And the Mormons were like, they didn't, you know, there's a whole thing where like a baby isn't a baby until they breathe their soul in.
Yeah.
So they have to actually be born.
Yeah.
So there was a question whether pre-birth anything is even an issue.
Oh, so the soul doesn't happen until they come out?
Yeah, they don't have a soul.
Wow, they've got it, you know, that's sort of like they pop out.
I'm no
out.
Expert on Mormonism.
No,
but
I get
I'm just
it.
Telling you, I was listening to these really interesting conversations where the Mormons were like, hang on a minute. Are we for this or against this? We're not sure.
You like Utah?
I do. It's beautiful.
It is, yeah, right?
Really beautiful.
Yeah.
I like to ski. I go there a lot in the...
Where, Park City?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you grow up skiing?
I did. In Massachusetts, yeah.
Where'd you go in Massachusetts? Like Stowe, Killington?
I went to my local mountain because they had a subsidized program after school to try and keep people Monday through Friday at the like local spot. Basquet is where.
Okay.
Basquet, Brody, and Jiminy Peak were the three places I grew up going. And Basquet offered after school, like, I think it was a $10 ticket, lift ticket, and free rentals.
Yeah.
So suddenly my poor family was like, yeah, the kids have something to do. It's cheap. We can teach them cheap. I learned, like, in between my dad's legs for a little while. And then in middle and high school, that was, like, all the rage.
Yeah. I used
if you were
to
11
ski
years
all the time.
Old and you could go to the after school and night ski when the lights came
That's
on.
Fun.
So fun.
And you stuck with it. Like, because like somehow or another, it's become too, it's been too much. It seems aggravating to go skiing to me.
I think about it like a workout. Do you know what I mean? That's how I think about it now.
But like, I can't even get through a concert. All right. So like, I can't, in a way, it's sort of like 45.
There's apples and oranges. No, what are you talking about?
My point is that like, if I get a ticket to ski all day,
uh-huh.
I'm good for about half a day.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, how many runs do I need? When you're a kid, you're like, let's go back up.
Yeah.
And you're always going back up. But like after two or three runs, I'm like, I think I did it. I think I did the day. And now what happens?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the best day is you get in some really hard runs.
Yes.
So you feel like you really worked it out.
Yeah.
And then you have a long lunch with maybe a little booze.
Right. That's how, and friends.
Yep. And okay. friends
so
and a great
that.
View.
Right.
And then you go pick the kids up at some point. You
right.
go find them.
Yeah, after their day.
Home at 4:30 in the hot tub.
So you live by the ski area.
I do, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in New Mexico and people live up in Taos and stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, do you like doing the game show thing?
Oh, man, I love it.
I mean, because you're like, you're really good at it and it's fun. Is it fun?
It is the most fun. It's exhausting work. We do a lot of shows in a day.
What's it called again?
Press Your Luck.
Yeah.
Press Your Luck.
It's so weird that these big movie stars are doing game shows.
You know, it's interesting because I grew up on game shows. Yeah. I was a latchkey kid, right?
Yeah.
So like we came home after school. I watched Press Your Luck, the original Peter Tamarkin, you know, Whammy with my sister. We would watch it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So when the opportunity came, it's me. It's my personality.
Yeah, right. Like, sure.
You know, I don't pretend to have some, I don't know, highfalutin person. Yeah. I'm just like, I like people. I like meeting people. I love giving them life-changing cash and prizes. Who doesn't love that? It's like the best thing. And all they have to do is hit the button and, you know, and
it's
all about risk taking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's wild. The personalities, you know, who's going to push and who's not going to push.
Yeah. But I mean, the rules of it, I hosted a game show once that was some sort of like improvisational game show that didn't have any real stakes. It came over from England. It was called Nevermind the Buzzcocks. And I did the American version and I couldn't even wrap my brain around the fucking game. So like, there's like somewhere there's footage of me hosting like 12 of those things and I don't even know what's happening.
I will say, you do have to do a lot of work beforehand. Like just getting down, like, wait, now what happens after this round? Do I go to commercial?
Right?
Does this person spin first or who spins first? Yeah, I do have to remind myself of all of those little details. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I just couldn't cut it. It never went anywhere. It's the weirdest thing. I did so many of them for VH1, like 12 of them for when they were sort of inventing VH1.
Yeah.
With me and Galifianakis.
Oh, so fun.
But he did a talk show that went nowhere, and I did a game show. No, like no one saw the game show. And I don't even know if there's footage of it. It's crazy.
It's somewhere.
Well, I'm not unhappy about it. It's like one of these
great gifts.
You don't
want it unearthed.
No, I was just happy to leave with the suits.
Yeah, and the suits, yes. Yeah.
Can I keep the clothes?
Can I keep?
Then this wasn't a complete loss.
Where are you wearing suits?
I'm not wearing any suits.
I know.
Not anymore. I mean, I bought a black suit for the black suit stuff. I have one suit.
Yeah. Everyone needs the black suit, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Not a tux.
No. A suit. It's for funerals.
And award shows. That's the funny thing.
Important thing.
Award shows and funerals.
The good and the bad. Those are the rituals that we're doing that you wear a suit to at this point.
So what, the directing thing, do you love that?
I do really enjoy it, yeah.
And you know, now you're kind of a pro, right? You feel confident?
I feel I'm putting in my 10,000 hours.
That's a lot of hours.
You know, like, well, that's what they say when you feel.
Yeah, I know.
I feel less and
less. It seems like a lot of hours.
I feel less and less like an imposter.
Okay.
Right? Like the imposter syndrome, that's fading away. And I'm feeling like, you know what? I actually kind of know what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
That feels good. That feels confident.
It's all about having that good DP, right?
You got to have a great crew across the board. It's not just the DP.
Right.
I mean, you got to have ADs. The ADs do the whole schedule.
They're the whole thing.
Yeah.
The AD that's in the place, set AD.
They got to run it.
They run the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's a very specific personality. It's kind of wild. Right?
Yes.
But it seems to me like the DP thing, because I directed a couple episodes of my show, but it doesn't really count when you're in it because it's hard. Because then you're just sort of like, do I look all right? Can I look at it? Do I need to? Okay, let's just move on then. You got to trust somebody.
Yeah.
But like, it just seems to me that, like, because I don't understand, like Lynn knew about lenses and about, you know, overs and two shots and all that shit. But like, you see it, but really, if you want to direct, you could just really go, if you have a really good DP, you could be like, what do you think we should do here? That sounds good.
Could do that. It's not my favorite way to work as an actor. Is it your favorite way to work as an actor? Is when the director comes to set and is like, I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, no, they never ask the actor, but it just seems like.
But you get a feeling when they don't know what they're doing.
Do you know lenses and stuff? Are you good with that now?
I'm pretty good with it. Yeah. I'm all right.
We're going to use a whatever for this?
Well, I like to shot list, and I like to storyboard, and I love preparation. I'm all about the prep. I feel like the shoot is like the test, and I like to get A's on tests. So I do a lot of studying beforehand. That's, you know, I'm very prepped. But sometimes it's not a lens. It's like, I want it to feel like that, right? I want to be with the character. Well, that's a close-up. When you say that language, you're talking about a close-up.
And how you handle the, well, you're dealing with kids, too.
I did, we had some kids in this one,
Well, how do you do, like, you know, how are you as an actor's director? Do you, what do you bring?
I love actors.
Yeah, but how do you, like, as an actor, how do you deal, like, are you?
I probably give too many line readings.
Oh, you do?
I'm sure I do. Some actors don't care and others do. And that's really what I find for directors, that's the other thing, is like, everybody has their own process. You got to figure out what their process is a little bit. You know, and you can't give up your entire process because you still have to figure out, you're making the movie.
Sure.
But you do have to, you know, everybody works a little differently. And I try to honor as much as I can how the actor, what they're bringing to it. Their expectation is.
Yeah.
What do they need to get the best performance?
Yeah. Did you like working with Sigourney Weaver?
Loved.
I talked to her. She's,
she's intense. Yeah, I listened to it. What am I saying? Of course. Like, you just had her not that long ago.
She's very level.
Very level.
You know what I mean?
She's definitely got all her hours in, let me tell you.
Well, that's the thing about the hours thing. Isn't that weird, though? Like, that guy Malcolm Gladwell, it's his idea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of hours. If you really break it down, it's a lot of fucking hours.
Yes.
Like, you're going to be, like, you know, 50 years old. Like, I always think about it. Like, did I put 10,000 hours in? That's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours. But that's only
if
you want to be the best at something. You know, look, you're going to get close on podcasting. I mean, you know, and on being on the road. You have 10,000 hours of stand up.
You would think 10,000 hours. I've done like almost 1,400 of these podcasts, right? So they run about, you know, with talking to people. That's still like 14, let's say it's 1,600 hours.
Yes, but
in order to get 10,000 hours of podcasting.
You're not giving yourself enough credit.
Maybe,
but you had to watch my movie before. That was 2 hours of your life.
Okay, so that counts?
You have to prep, of course.
Okay.
You have to edit afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just show up and chit-chat and, like, you are creating this whole show, entire scenario.
All right. So, like, you're saying that, you know, driving to the gig.
Are you thinking about the gig on the drive?
Probably.
Well, then you're working,
aren't
you?
Well, yeah, you're sort of like, what's the hotel's, which hotel are we staying at?
That might be, does it count?
No, that doesn't count. So what, when you did Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
Why?
I loved the idea of
another one. This would be the third or the fourth. Which, I mean, like,
of the Charlie's Angels movies?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, it's almost the era that we grew up in, or that,
yes,
like, even with
absolutely.
That, with the game show thing, that there is a nostalgia market.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was sort of a very, you know, now seemingly camp undertaking, the Charlie's Angels.
Yes.
When you think about, like, the hair and that era. So how much of it was your decision to do that, to do the movie?
Well, I wrote the movie.
So it was all your decision.
I produced the movie. Yeah, I got my name on there 4 times. So I can't deny I had a lot of control over making that movie.
But you had the idea, you're like, it's time to make another Charlie's
Angels. I did want, I knew they had I was brought into Sony on a general meeting and they talked to me about something else. And the executive brought up, and you know, we have Charlie's Angels if you ever want to do anything with that. And I was like, ooh, wait a minute. And then, you know, I went home and I kind of had an idea. And then I was like, I think I do want to do that.
Yeah.
And then, like, it took like 5 years till we made it.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was very invested. And I loved my actors.
Yeah.
I had Kristen Stewart, who I think is one of the greatest of her generation.
She's great.
And just stunning and a surprise.
Did you like that movie, Spencer?
Surprising in the movie.
Did you watch Spencer?
I did. Well, I loved her performance.
I liked the movie. I like those weird kind of poetic meditations on, like, I like the Marilyn movie. I don't give a fuck what anybody does.
Yeah, I did too.
That was crazy, that movie.
I think they're really
Jackie
really
O movie was good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three of a kind. Anyway, so yeah. So you like your actors. 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years. So you're like, you're kind of pregnant with it, as they say in the business, right?
That's why I never set out to direct or anything like that.
Why?
Because it's sort of like, It's going to take that long to, you know, you like.
Well,
you,
it's not like I wasn't doing other things, you know, along the way. Okay. I have a lot of other,
you know,
pokers in the fire. So.
So you got people working on stuff and you
And you know, and you go to some meetings and you think like it's never going to happen.
Right.
And then over time you realize, oh, it might actually happen. And then like you really start gearing up and then like you're in Berlin, Germany and you're making the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And it's happening. It took on a life of its own at a certain point where you're just like, all right, the train's moving and we're leaving the station and let's go.
Yeah. And it didn't do well, or it did?
It did not do well on opening weekend, but it's beloved by a lot of people.
That's nice. And they all email you.
Well, they do. You know what? It's interesting. I went to see it on opening weekend.
Yeah.
You know, you can like go and hop around theaters sometimes, see how the audience is doing it. And I sat behind this group of young women, mostly girls of color.
Yeah.
I have a black angel and a woman of Asian descent in there, Indian woman.
Uh-huh.
And these girls were on having like their birth. It was like a 13-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah.
And they were all at Charlie's Angels for the birthday party. And they were all in the row. And then there were a couple moms behind them. And they loved the movie. They had the best time. And they laughed at all the places I wanted them to laugh.
Right.
And, you know, they clapped. And they loved it. And, like, that's why you do it.
Yeah.
You do it for that.
That's half of it.
Yeah.
That, it seems like, you know, with the Pitch Perfect and the Charlie's Angels, it's like, you know, making young people enjoy their time is good.
Yeah.
And then you do Call Jane, and that's making, you know, grown-ups understand, you know, what we're up against.
I also aimed to entertain with that one, too.
Well, you know, of course,
like, always entertain.
And really?
If you can be, I like to call it being quietly revolutionary.
Mm.
Right? Like, there's always something a little revolutionary in what I'm doing. You know, Pitch Perfect, if you think about the poster for Pitch Perfect, I mean, we weren't, you don't see posters with, you know, eight women on the poster.
Yeah, yeah,
that those don't exist. That's not a thing in Hollywood.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, these stories about that many women working together to solve a problem.
Right.
They're hard to find those.
There's a couple of movies coming out soon that are going to be heavy. Did you see the women talking movie? The Sarah Polley?
I'm excited about that. I love Sarah Polley as a
She's filmmaker. Great. Did you see it?
I have not seen it. No,
and what about the other one about the reporters?
Oh, Zoe? She said.
Yeah. Did you see that?
Nope.
Don't you get
But by
links?
The way, I've been busy talking to you.
All right. I can't watch everything either. I know.
I can't wait to go on vacation. I watch them all when I go to vacation.
You're waiting for your screeners?
Yeah. Well, it's all on, everything's digital now. It's the best.
Oh, really? They don't send, I guess they don't send them anymore.
No, you don't even have to wait for the DVDs. It all gets downloaded. Bam.
Well, you're such a good actress.
Thanks.
Because you can do all the stuff.
Yeah, it's fun. I prefer the comedies, though.
When's a new comedy coming?
I don't know. Nobody puts me in comedies
What's
anymore.
The Beanie Bubble?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. I forgot about that one.
I just see a name on there. I'm like,
I don't know when that's coming
I'm
out.
I'm looking at Beanie Bubble. I'm like, that can't be serious.
No, me and Zach Galifianakis. No.
Really? You and Galifianoodles?
Yeah. What's Galifianoodles is in that with me.
What's he doing?
What he goes by, too. He was great. We had such a good time together.
What's it about?
It's about the Beanie Baby craze in the early 90s.
Okay.
And when it all burst. I mean, you know, you remember people thought that if they bought those things, that it was like a great investment.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
And people were making hundreds of thousands of dollars off of those Beanie Babies.
Off of Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
It was
they
like
were little commodities.
Right. Collector's market.
Yep. Exactly. It was the rise of eBay.
Yeah.
Right? It was at the same time as these little Beanie Babies.
So this is about the Beanie Crash?
It's about the crash. The Beanie Bubble. Bursting.
Who came up with that movie?
That it was based on a book too. There was a great book about it, about that whole time, that era, and the you know, and Ty Warner, who's the founder, still alive, in Chicago, billionaire.
The Beanie guy?
Yeah, that guy's got a B.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah.
From Beanie Babies?
Yeah.
Do they
well,
still
and other
make
things. Ty, you know that little tag, the TY tag, it's on a heart.
Yeah.
And that guy's it's big business. My kids have some Ty stuff. I mean, you know, they're like really cute. Now, right now, they're all about these big eyes.
Oh.
These little.
So that's his
creatures
thing.
Of it, yes.
Billionaire.
He, yeah, and he did some things right.
I guess. If you want $1 billion, you want the responsibility of it. I like to think of myself as somebody who...
You could have the billion, but it'd be too much.
Yeah, I just want to stay at this level.
Yeah, yeah.
The course. Next level, it seems like you can only hang out with certain people.
Sure.
It's kind of true, though. It's kind of true.
No, you can always. I don't know. I just remember where I'm from, and then I just hang out with people. I don't know. Keep it.
Do you hang out with Reese Witherspoon?
Not very often.
Hmm. Who are your buddies?
Who are you asking about, my famous buddies or my actual buddies?
Well, yeah, first name, actual buddies.
I have a lot of actual buddies.
From back in the day?
I do have some very old friends. I mean, the people that I like to travel with and stuff, although I went...
You travel with people?
I went this summer on an amazing vacation with school friends.
From college?
Like elementary school friends. Like my kids became friends with other kids and I met the parents and I was like, yeah, I like you.
Oh, okay.
And you don't, you know, as an adult,
yeah,
it's not that easy to make new friends.
I know.
It's hard. Especially so when your kids are little, especially. Yeah. So I tell people who have little kids, they're like, I never leave the house. I have a 3-year-old, you know, it's terrible. And it is. It's not great.
Yeah.
No, it's not great for your social life to have a 3-year-old. But once they're in school all day.
And you see these women for years.
And then you're like every, you know, drop off. You're like, hey. And then you kind of maybe have a coffee. And then the next thing you know, you're kind of.
Traveling.
Well, and you're doing. Because you have a lot in common all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you forget. This is what makes people friends.
Oh, so that's a new friend thing.
Common
that's
experiences.
My problem. I have no kids and I don't, you know, I just do comedy. I'm not going to meet anybody.
You'll have your old friends from comedy.
I have a couple old friends.
You have some old friends from comedy.
All right. So what happens now? What happens today? What are you working on right now?
Still in post on Cocaine Bear.
Oh, so you got to go look at.
We're in color timing.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
We're color timing that film and getting it ready for release in February.
Is it sad to see Ray?
It is sad to see Ray.
Was he done shooting when he passed?
Yes, he was. Yeah. But I had just seen him. He'd just done ADR. So I had just seen him. He'd come in, we'd hugged. He was telling me about his summer plans. He was going down to make this movie in the Dominican. That's where he passed away.
What happened? He just died of a heart attack?
Well, I don't like to tell someone else's story. Do you know what I mean? It's not my story to tell.
I don't know. I have all the details.
But I do have the details. And yeah, I mean, he went to sleep and he didn't wake up, basically.
It's the best way.
Yeah. By the way, the way we all want to go.
No shit.
That's it.
Oh, my God. So you're just doing that? You're doing post on that?
I'm doing post on that. I'm promoting Call Jane.
Yeah, that's what we did.
That's what we're doing.
Do we do that thoroughly?
I don't know. Sure. Yes. Like people should see the movie.
I thought it was a good movie.
Thank you. I'm really happy with it. And I am, and now I'm back finally in like mom mode. Today's Halloween. Happy Halloween to those
who
celebrate.
Did you carve?
We sure did. We carved.
You did?
Yeah, I actually have a fat lip from, I was putting a stencil on the pumpkin and I went to rip a piece of tape with my mouth and the tape stuck on my and ripped part of my lip off.
Oh my God.
Yeah, those are the little things that can
pumpkin
happen.
Pumpkin stencils,
yeah. So you can make it look real pro on the pumpkin with the stencil.
Really?
Oh yeah.
But do you cut the...
Then you use the stencil as like an outline. And then you
cut?
Yeah.
All the way through?
Yes, all the way through. What does that mean? You're carving the pumpkin, of course.
No, I know, but like I see some pretty pro jobs and they look like there's some, it's like partially through and then all the way through. And
yes, because you can like shadow stuff. Yeah. No, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not that level.
Yeah.
No.
I got two pumpkins sitting out there. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to. I'm like, I thought I was going to carve them, but now I'm just sort of like, they get the idea.
Right.
I just want them to know I have candy.
I do like that they glow. It's something to do with the kids. My kids love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like they come around here. Did you see across the street?
Oh, your neighborhood's excellent.
It's crazy.
LA is the biggest holiday in LA. I tell people this all over because we have all the best, you know, it's all the production
the
designers.
People. Yeah, the guy
and the hair and makeup people.
The biggest gig of his year.
Literally.
Is over there.
They've got things, you know, in the basement that none of us can dream of. And they just bring it all out and put it up. Yeah. And they know how to do it all right. You know, light it, all the lighting design.
The guy across the street's got, every year it's a theme. Like last year it was an operating room with skeletons.
Yes!
And this year there's a tent. It's a camping theme.
Of course. This is what I mean. People put so much energy into it here. It's really amazing and excellent.
They've been out of work for a while.
I don't even think it's that. I think they really... Yeah. Well, the neighborhood starts to come to expect it too, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Like, wouldn't you be pissed if that guy didn't put something up?
Sure. My old neighborhood, there was two. It was not, but it definitely wasn't a Hollywood undertaking. But there was two houses next to each other that were clearly competing.
Oh, yeah.
During Christmas and Halloween. It was just this shit show of stuff. Lights and ghouls.
It brings me joy. So.
What kind of candies did you buy?
I don't buy chocolate because in LA, it's actually hot and things melt.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I got some dots. I got some Skittles, a lot of Skittles. Mm. I like a Skittle.
You do?
Yeah. Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah.
Dum Dums. I love those lollipops.
Okay. Pretty good.
Things like that. That's what I got.
I went all chocolate, but now I'm nervous.
Well.
I went Reese's.
Yes.
The Twix.
Best. Yum.
Kit Kat.
Love it.
Snickers.
Can't get enough.
The best ones.
All the best. You got to go watch that nut allergy, though, with those Snickers.
Well, they know. It's not on me. You tell your kid. I'm going to. What is it?
I don't deal with the nut allergy very well either.
What are you gonna do?
I'm just like, come on, really?
Yeah. Like, are you gonna like trick or treat? Do you have any allergies?
No, exactly.
All right. Good talking to you again.
Oh, you're the best.
You are.
We barely touched on anything.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
What do you feel like we missed? We went pretty thoroughly into abortion politics. We got into the movie.
Yeah.
We talked about you directing fairly thoroughly.
That I can tell you're very interested in. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we did the. We talked about the cocaine bear, the whole story.
Cocaine bear,
right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
it goes by too fast. Mark.
We talked about Jews.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, kind of a lot. Your kid's getting bar mitzvahed. You've got a kid down
happening.
The hall speaking in the ancient tongue. Baruch Hu Es Adonai Amara.
Yeah.
Is that happening? Mm-hmm. That's happening down the hall.
It's going to be happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So the grandparents really Jewish?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, yes and yes.
It's a cultural thing, you know, and it's important now to like, it's weird because I'm not that religious certainly anymore, but I'm culturally Jewish. And like every time I do a special, I really hit this like Jew tone just to make people who don't like Jews mad. Like I would want to poke at them with Jew stuff. And I'm doing it again. And I got to go to Oklahoma and Texas. And
now it's
midterms. I'm like, what am I? Why don't I just paint a target on myself?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you can't live in fear.
But you can't shut the fuck up. You know, but for me, I'm just sort of like,
you mean you're being too provocative, you think even?
Well, yeah, I literally say, you know, as a Jew.
Your existence is provocative to certain people.
I'll say this on stage. I'll say, I just want you to know, as a Jew, we will replace you.
It goes over great.
Kills. Except for the two people that are like.
Exactly. That are like, conspiracy theory I subscribe
to. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Their brains are broken.
That is true. And they're not coming back. How do you fix that? How do you fix whatever the fuck has happened? I say that exact thing, that their brains are broken and they're irretrievable.
Often irretrievable, yeah. But I do, I mean, I don't know. You got it. They're also probably not surrounded by, you know, they don't know nice, you know, Jews.
I guess so. But it's just where they're getting their information and how
it's
getting them worked up.
Yes. But also, yeah, but then I think, why, again, living in fear, what are they afraid of the Jews are going to do to them? Literally. What are they afraid of? They are living in fear. Period. Full stop.
Well, they think that it's a control thing, that they're secretly.
They're going to be controlled. Are they?
I got some bad news for you. We invented Jesus.
he was a Jew.
Yeah.
But I constantly am like, I want you to sit in your home this morning and make your cup of coffee and drive your car and walk down the street and go to your shop and go to the bar.
Right.
And I want you to think about all the control that's being, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and what does it
mean? You're getting up, you're going to work, you're living your life.
It kind of ties into-
You're paying your taxes. Like,
but it ties into socialism and communism and all this, you know, and like a money thing.
Yeah.
And then now with Hollywood, they're really kind of pushing the, you know, they've got our brains fucked. you know, the Jews. It's like, look, we just, we know how to make movies.
What do you want? We're just entertaining you. What are you talking about?
Look over here. All right. Well, now that we figured that out, I think we covered everything except for you didn't give me one name of one famous friend.
Oh, my goodness.
Fine.
You still want a famous friend?
I just want to know, like, who you got laughing with.
I love Melissa McCarthy.
Ah, see?
There you go.
Now
her husband, Ben. That's how I met her, through her husband, Ben.
And you guys go to have dinner parties and stuff?
Yes, we do.
How hilarious is that?
Yes, we do.
See, that makes me happy. That's entertaining me. And I don't think you divulge anything. It's like, now we know, like, you, Elizabeth Banks and Melissa McCarthy are just hanging out eating. And
sometimes. You
know, that's the best.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I will have food with Jeff Ross.
I love Jeff Ross. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Occasionally, we'll be at the comedy store, and he doesn't know how to cook, so he has to eat out all the time. So we'll go to Craig's, which I never go to, though part of me thinks
Love
I need
Craig's.
To go there. Of course. But like, part of me is sort of like, do I need to be part of this? Do I need to go
to Craig's because they have the best spaghetti squash dish in LA.
You probably live close by. I'm across town over here.
No, I'm not that close to Craig's either.
All right.
It's not a place it's not easy to go.
Here's
but when I go,
me.
It's delicious.
Yeah, I always enjoy it. And I've sat with Craig because I go with Ross.
Love Craig, yeah.
But like, you know, I never know if I'm at the level where if I go in, will I be taken care of?
Well, what does that mean?
You know what it means.
No, you got to pay your bill.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying like, if I called and I said, it's Mark Maron, can I get a... Right. Am I on that list?
Minus Jeff Ross?
Right.
Don't know.
Exactly. And that bothers me.
You know what though? The hierarchy is everywhere. There's always somebody bigger and better. Bono could always show up.
That's right. Yeah.
Bono could always show up.
I like the stories where whoever's working the door, they don't know them. And
that's the best.
Oh, it's the best. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See, that was fun. I love her. Call Jane, the movie that she's in, is playing in theaters now. And could you please hang out for a minute? I'll lighten up. I'll lighten up. Hey, I'm back. Here's today's suggestion for an archive episode you can now listen to for free. Episode 838 with Jennifer Lawrence. She's got a new movie out this week on Apple TV Plus called Causeway, but this talk with her is from 2018 when she just spent the past 5 years at the peak of fame and was dealing with the ramifications of that. Where do you live? In fancy area?
Yeah, I live up in a big mansion up in Beverly Hills, obviously.
By yourself in a big mansion?
Yeah.
Do you have servants and people?
One servant.
One person who lives there all the time?
Horrible. No, nobody lives there. Me and my dog Pippi.
But you have somebody come over and do things.
Yeah.
You have an assistant. You're full Hollywood, right?
I'm full Hollywood, yeah.
Like, did you
I'm fully staffed.
Did you put your own makeup on this morning?
I did.
Oh, it looks very good.
Yeah. I'm not like that.
Not that bad?
Yeah, I just have a security guard outside and didn't drive myself.
But he's not.
But other than that, I'm totally normal.
But he's not your regular guy.
No, I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah,
he could be a murderer.
Right, he was just here. Right, he's here. He said he was a security guard.
Yeah.
I believed him, but you don't know him?
I don't know him.
Should we call the authorities? No, he said he works for the movie company.
Why don't I just start screaming and let's see what he does?
Let's not do that because you know, either way, I'm going to have to explain something.
Yeah, not in this climate.
No, exactly. I don't need that. You can listen to that episode now for free in any podcast app as part of the large back catalog we've released. If you want older episodes like the first one I did with Elizabeth Banks back in 2013, you can sign up for any tier of WTF Plus. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. All right, I'm at Largo this Thursday, November 10th. Running the hour. I'm in Long Beach, California at the Carpenter Performing Arts Center this Saturday, November 12th. Eugene, Oregon at the Holt Center for the Performing Arts on Friday, November 18th. Bend, Oregon at the Tower Theater on Saturday, November 19th. Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel for two shows on Friday, December 2nd. And then Nashville, Tennessee, I'm at the James K. Polk Center on Saturday, December 3rd. And my HBO special taping is at Town Hall in New York City on Thursday, December 8th. Two shows. Thank you. Monkey and the Fonda, Cat Angels everywhere.